Will the House come to order? Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
37 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Collins is excused from the call of the House, and I'd like the record to note that Representative Boucher is ill today and therefore excused.
Our chaplain today is Donald Anderson. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
This is a prayer for America. O thou kind Lord, this gathering is turning to thee. These hearts are radiant with thy love. These minds and spirits are exhilarated by the message of thy glad tidings. O God, let this American democracy become glorious in spiritual degrees, even as it has aspired to material degrees, and render this just government victorious. Confirm this revered nation to upraise the standard of the oneness of humanity, to promulgate the most great peace, to become thereby most glorious and praiseworthy among all the nations of the world. O God, this American nation is worthy of thy favors and is deserving of thy mercy. Make it precious and near to thee through thy bounty and bestowal.
Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that prayer be spread on the journal.
Are there any objections as to having the prayer spread upon the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the journal for the 96th, 97th, and 98th legislative day?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 96th, 97th, and 98th days in House Supplement number 52.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journal for the 96th, 97th, 98th days in House Supplement 52 be approved as certified.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journal and the supplementary journal? Hearing no objections, the journal stand approved. Do we have any guests for introduction today? Messages from the governor.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any messages from the Senate?
The Senate has passed and returned committee substitute for House Bill 14, Finance, an act making members of the Alaska Territorial Guard eligible for a death gratuity and providing for an effective date. This bill has been sent to enrolling. I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications that should come before this body?
We're in receipt of notice of proposed changes in the regulations of the Department of Health and Social Services. This was duplicated and placed on each member's desk. I have no further communications, Mr. Speaker.
On the daily order of business, this brings us to reports of standing committees.
The Committee on Labor and Commerce has had committee substitute for Senate Bill 53, Labor and Commerce, title amended, Exchange of Unemployment Insurance Information, under consideration and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Navar Chairman, concurred in by Navar, Copen and Hanley, Pierce, Boucher, and Davis. Senate Bill 53 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. The Committee on Labor and Commerce has had House Resolution 8, Establishment of a Sister State Relationship with Taiwan, under consideration and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Navar Chairman, concurred in by Navar, Copen and Hanley, Pierce, and Boucher. Davis has no recommendation. House Resolution 8 has no further referral. The Committee on Resources has had House Joint Resolution 14, Navigability of Alaska's Rivers and Lakes, under consideration, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Joint Resolution 14, Transportation, with the same title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Schultz co-chair, concurring Schultz, Herman, Cato, Jenkins, and Pierce, having no recommendation, Sun, Thompson, and Wallace. House Joint Resolution number 14 has no further referral. The Committee on Judiciary is Head House Bill 31, Obstruction or Hindrance of Lawful Hunting, Fishing, or Trapping, under consideration, recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, signing do pass Pettijohn, Phillips, and Taylor. Having no recommendation, M.M. Miller and Grunberg, signing do not pass, Clarkson. House Bill 31 has a further referral to the Resources Committee. The Committee on Finance is Head House Bill 147, creating a Division of Equal Employment Opportunity in the Department of Administration, under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 147, Finance, with a new title, and recommends it do pass and attaches a new fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring Adams, Zemanski, Duncan, Porchot, Larson, Binkley, Cotton, Frank, and Rieger. House Bill 147 has no further referral. The Committee on Hess is Head House Bill 191, State Aid for School Construction, under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 191 Hess with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by the co-chairs, Kopanen and Grunberg. Signing do pass, Hanley, Thompson, Pettijohn, Kopanen, Grunberg, Taylor, and Hurley. House Bill 191 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Committee on Judiciary has Head House Bill 218, Standards of Conduct of Legislators and Legislative Employees, and to the Select Committee on Legislative Ethics, under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 218, Judiciary, with the same title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, signing do pass, M.M. Miller, Son, Grunberg, Phillips, Pettijohn, Clarkson, and Taylor. House Bill 218 has no further referral.
House Bill 218 has a fiscal note and will be referred to the Finance Committee.
The Committee on Finance has had House Bill 231, Amount of General and Temporary Relief Assistance, under consideration, and it's reported back as follows with a fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing do pass, Adams, Binkley, Duncan, and Porchot. Having no recommendations, Zemanski, Larson, Cotton, Rieger, and Frank. House Bill 231 has no further referral. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 240, relating to motor vehicles, under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 240, Judiciary, with a new title, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurring M.M. Miller, Pettijohn, Phillips, Grunberg, and Taylor. Having no recommendation, Clarkson. House Bill 240 has no further referral. The Committee on State Affairs is at House Bill 252, State Retirement Benefits, under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 252, State Affairs, with the same title, recommends it do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Hurley, Chairman, concurring Hurley, M.M. Miller, Boucher, Navarre, and Cato. Having no recommendation, Jenkins. House Bill 252 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees.
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us to the introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Karen Robinson by Representatives Duncan and M.M. Miller. Citation honoring Sean Rustad by Representative Navarre. Citation honoring Ian Pitsman by Representative Navarre. Citation honoring Mark Giles by Representative Navarre. Citation honoring Homer Mariners, Representative Navarre. Citation honoring Anchorage, the third time All-American City, by Representatives Grunberg, Adams, Binkley, Boucher, Cato, Clarkson, Collins, Cotton, Davis, Duncan, Frank, Fuller, Furness, Gall, Hanley, Hurley, Jenkins, Kopanen, and Larson, Martin, M.M. Miller, M.W. Miller, Navarre, Pierce, Pettijohn, Phillips, Pinalberry, Porchot, Rieger, Ringstad, Schultz, Sun, Zemanski, Taylor, Thompson, Euling, Grusendorf, and Maru. I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
These citations will be referred to rules for calendaring. This brings us to introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
Sponsor substitute for House Bill 11 by Davis, an act relating to municipal taxation of agricultural land and providing for an effective date.
Community and Regional Affairs, Resources, and Finance Standing Committees.
House Bill 393 by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to the rights of physically and mentally disabled persons.
Judiciary and the Finance Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar? Representative Pettijohn. Would the House please stand at ease? Would the House please come back to order? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could we revert to introduction of guests, please?
Are there any objections? Proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have down from Fairbanks constituent. He's the Director of Emergency Medical Services, and I'd like for you to welcome to the body Craig Lewis and Gallerier.
Any further guests for introduction? This brings us back to the daily calendar. Representative Schultz, or you're just stretching? Glad you could make it today. This brings us back to the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 104 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act relating to computation, forfeiture, and restoration of statutory good time. The Committee on Health, Education, and Social Services has had House Bill 104 under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 104, Hess with a new title, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by the co-chairs, Kopanen and Grunberg, signing do pass, Grunberg, Taylor, and Pettijohn. Kopanen signed amend in line or department in line of department recommendations. And the Hurley signed amend in line with department recommendations, and Hanley has no recommendation. The Committee on Judiciary has had House Bill 104 under consideration and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 104 Judiciary with a new title and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, signing do pass, M.M. Miller, Sund, and Clarkson. Grunberg signed pass if amended to change 1/4 to 1/3. Taylor and Phillips have no recommendation, and Pettijohn signed do not pass unless amended. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 104 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the committee substitute Judiciary? Hearing no objections, the committee substitute is adopted. Do we have any further amendments on our desk?
Amendment number 1 by Grunberg and Pettijohn. It starts page 1, line 11. It has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk.
Representative Grunberg.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment. The amendment provides that if anybody has their sentence reduced as a result of this bill, which will change the present policy of a maximum of 1/4, it's not a maximum, of 1/4 of one sentence to be taken off for good time. The bill now provides that 1/3 of the sentence would be taken off for good time, and that's a difference of 1/12. The amendment simply provides that if anybody falls into that category, having been previously sentenced, that they would be run by the parole board so the parole board can determine that they are not a danger to the community. I move the amendment.
Are there objections to amendment number 1? Hearing no objections, amendment number 1 has been adopted. Do we have any further amendments before us?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 104 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objections to the advancement from second to third reading? Hearing no objections, would the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 104, Judiciary amended by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to computation, forfeiture, and restoration of statutory good time and providing for an effective date.
Is there any debate? Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I didn't get a chance to attend any of the committee hearings on this. I had a question. It was brought to my attention earlier that in the Anchorage jails, the people, the residents there were getting a different computation of good time than in the state jails. And as a result, it was they were staying in the house longer if they were sentenced under a municipal sentence as opposed to if they're a shorter period of time if it was a state jurisdiction. So I wonder if somebody could respond to that.
Representative
Mr. Clarkson. Speaker, on page 1 of the legislation, line 13, my amendment assured that the municipality will treat people the same as the state does. Eliminates the problem raised by the former member, former speaker, and you were a former member before. For those that read the Sunday version of the Anchorage Times, there was an editorial that raises a concern with regard to the inconsistency in good time rules between the municipality and the state. If you adopt this legislation, you'll eliminate the inconsistency.
Any further debate? Representative Martin.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Speaker, I read the article, but the most important thing that was not in the article was the recidivism rate. I was wondering if it was proven that perhaps the city of Anchorage was able to decrease recidivism because the people had spent a longer time in jail for drunk driving or whatever. I was wondering if the majority leader could give us some indication as to what program is most effective.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, if I might speak to the question in lieu of the majority leader responding. One of the problems that we have had throughout this process of evaluating this legislation is the lack of meaningful recidivism studies being done either by our Department of Corrections or by any political subdivision such as Anchorage. It's my understanding that such studies are presently ongoing and that they are going to be upgraded and improved. In essence, it's a matter of strong concern, I'm sure, to every member of this body that we be appraised as to what the effect is, not only of the differential in sentencing that we'll be voting on here today, but also what the overall effect is of the presumptive sentencing requirements that we have placed as a body into law and have now been ongoing for some period of time. Hopefully, within the next 2 years, we're going to have hard data upon which we can rely, and I think that's very important for us and for the public in considering how long sentences should be and how long people should stay in jail. But in answer to your question, no, sir, there is no good hard data at this point. The best data we have to work with comes from the parole board itself, which indicates that we have one of the lowest recidivism rates in the nation for those people that they have seen fit to give early releases to.
Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, the previous speaker is correct on both points. We do have one of the lowest recidivism rates for parolees. But I think you should bear in mind that during my time on the board, and from what I understand since I left, we have probably the toughest parole board in the United States. And I think that's the reason that particular statistic is as low as it is. This previous speaker also stated that these recidivism studies are ongoing and that we should have some information perhaps next year to address the question. And that's why I think this bill is premature. I'm going to vote against it. I urge everybody else to vote against it. Now, the bill we passed last week, 141, dealt with the parole board. And it dealt with the fact that from now on, you only have to serve, if this bill passes the other body and becomes law, you've only got to do 25% of your sentence before you can be put back out on the street by the parole board. I argued against that bill at the time and offered an amendment which failed passage. And the reasons why that failed passage may have been good in many members' eyes. After all, we do have a parole board. We're not putting people on the street with that bill. We're simply making them eligible for parole. And we do have a tough parole board, and they do exercise their discretion carefully. So that bill doesn't really give me as much heartburn as the one before us now, because this one before us now is simply a method, and everybody ought to understand that very clearly if you vote for this bill. All you're doing is providing a way to get people out of prison, regardless of the most important factors that may have put them there in the first place. Now, this will let people out, instead of having to serve essentially three-fourths of the time before they're put out on mandatory parole release, assuming that they haven't met parole, they haven't been able to get by the parole board, this will let them out after doing two-thirds of their time. So it's a net reduction of about 8%. Now, remember, ladies and gentlemen, these are people who have not made parole. For whatever reason, either they are on they're serving mandatory sentences, presumptive terms, or they've gone in front of the parole board and the parole board has said, no, you max out, do all of your time. We aren't going to put you out on parole, and for good reasons normally. But nonetheless, these people are going to hit the streets early because of this bill. Now, the argument's going to be made, well, these are people who are paying attention to the rules of the institution. They've earned this good time. They've been good boys while they've been in prison. They haven't caused any trouble, so let's let them out on the street. I would urge you all to consider the fact that obeying the rules of an institution does not necessarily have anything to do with your ability to function on the street. There are a lot of people who are serving a lot of hard time in this state who get along real well in institutions. They're institutionalized. They belong in prison. They're very comfortable there. They get along real well. They cannot make it on the outside, and this is where this bill is going to put them. It's simply a question of of how you want to handle the crowded prisons that I acknowledge we do have. This bill says, open up the doors, let everybody out. Murderers, rapists, robbers, everybody. The guys that couldn't make parole, send them out on the streets a little early. I don't think that's a rational way to approach the problems we have in corrections. I will leave it at that, Mr. Speaker, but I want to urge everybody to think very carefully about this. It is the first effort at dealing with the whole question which all of us either are wrestling with or will wrestle with, the whole question of presumptive terms. You know, if you commit rape, first-degree sexual assault, the law says you're going to jail for 8 years, period, in the absence of aggravating or mitigating circumstances. The present law says if you do that, if you get 8 years before you're going to be released on good time, serve six of it. This bill is just going to say, is just going to knock it down and say you got to serve two-thirds, not three-fourths, which will have a very beneficial effect, I imagine, on the prison population. But are these the people we want to let out on the streets, the people who are either serving presumptive terms or who have been unable to secure a parole? Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, I speak in support of the bill. A lot of what the previous speaker said would perhaps have been true, although I don't necessarily agree with his conclusions, but at least in a technical sense, a lot of what he had said would have been true had we not adopted Amendment Number 1. And even though I had voted due pass, or recommended due pass on the committee report, I was just a little bit nervous when we passed the bill out of committee, because I hadn't, in my mind, I think none of us had structured a way to get around this very situation that the previous speaker mentioned, and that is that there are perhaps a number of people who will be let out 1/12 earlier than they otherwise would. But with the passage of this amendment, we've given the parole board, which everybody admits is doing an excellent job on this and is one of the toughest in the nation, we've given the parole board to look at those people who should not be released, who would not otherwise have been released under a parole situation, as the previous speaker mentioned. And to them we say, no, thank you. You're going to serve up to the time that you were sentenced under, that is one-fourth deduction due on the good time release. Mr. Speaker, I think I should explain two or three things that this bill does, and it makes so very much sense. First of all, we have in our prison system right now people serving under three different types of good time accumulation, and it's a mess. In each of the 15 institutions, we have one employee in each of those spending a good portion, perhaps almost all of his or her time, computing good time, just because the way it's structured in the law right now is such a mess. Prior to 1971, we had what is called block time, and they could a person could be get out on good time after if 1/3 of their time had been I'm saying that wrong. We had a block time system, and under the block time system, you could have 1/3 of your sentence taken off. Then, there were also meritorious additional time, good time provisions in there, and then there were even extra meritorious good time provisions in there. A portion, although now a small portion, of the people that are in prison were sentenced and are serving under that scenario. Then in 1971 until 1980, we adopted the accrual system, which is what we're on right now. Now, I should go back a little bit and explain the difference between block and accrual. On block time, the first day that you arrive in prison, you are given 1/3 of your sentence off, you might say forgiven, for good time. You've got that to count on, except that every time you foul up, a little bit of that is knocked away from you. And if you are a habitual, bad offender, you'll find that a good portion of your good time is removed frequently, and pretty soon you've served the entire sentence that you were sentenced to. On the other hand, if you arrive in prison on the first day and don't accumulate any demerits, when one-third remains of your sentence, you can walk out the door under that 1971 statute. Okay, then in 1971, we switched for reasons that are apparently not all that clear, but the legislature switched to an accrual time, which is sort of just the opposite. It says, and in that says, for every 3 days that you kept your nose clean, you accumulated 1 day. So that what it amounted to was 1/4. Well, that sounds all right, except it's an accounting nightmare. That means that somebody has to be recomputing every 3 days the fact that you accumulated a day. And besides that, the problem again is, particularly with the bad offenders, they haven't got much to lose. If a guy has, you know, kind of fouled up 2 or 3 times and he's only got 1 or 2 days accumulated, even for a serious offense, you don't have anything hanging over his head. So from a standpoint of a prison tool to control behavior, the accrual system that we're presently under is not good. The 1971 accrual system not only wasn't good in that respect, it was also confusing because there was also some meritorious provisions in there under which you could also get 1/3, which further complicated the bookkeeping to a horrendous degree. In 1980, we've got the accrual system, and as I say, it works to 1/4. So we've got three different systems in there right now, and almost a full-time person in each prison trying to keep up with the paperwork as to how much good time a person has earned. So what this bill would do, first of all, it would reestablish the block time method, and when a prisoner goes in and has X number of days or X number of months or years assigned to them, they would know that that 1/3 of that time is already taken off for good time, except if they're not good, they will just progressively lose bigger and bigger shares of it. And eventually, of course, it could all be gone. That provides an excellent tool for the superintendent, for the correctional officers, for everybody else. That's a real, you know, carrot or sword which hanging over your head, whichever way you want to look at it. It's a real good incentive for people to abide by the rules and in the process, hopefully even to rehabilitate themselves. Further, from everything that takes place from this point on, a judge, of course, can sentence with that 1/3 in mind, and it's and the judge can set any minimum he wants to, and he can set any sentence that he wants to, and so that can be taken into consideration. The only sticking point right now is the fact that some people would have been sentenced under the old system, now would be under the new system, and in the process they could pick up 1/12. They could be released 1/12 earlier than they otherwise would have been. And that bothers some people. In fact, in the case of some prisoners, it sort of bothered me, Mr. Speaker, until we adopted this amendment. And with the adoption of that amendment, that gives me, in my mind, the safeguards, that we're all right. That if we have a bad actor in there, that even though he's kept his nose clean, we know he shouldn't be out on the street, or she shouldn't be out on the street, at least until the maximum incarceration possible has taken place. This parole board of ours, a tough parole board, just says, as I mentioned a minute ago, no, thank you. We don't care to handle it that way. If with that safeguard in there, it does have monetary benefits for the state. I think this, there's two mechanical great advantages to this system. Number one, we get rid of this computing nightmare, this accounting nightmare that we've got right now. We have everybody working on one system, and the one system is actually pretty easy to do. Probably one person in each prison will be working a maximum 1 hour a day instead of almost a whole day every day, keeping track of good time. In addition to that, of course, it does have the advantage of freeing up beds. It has the advantage. We can actually free up 22 beds a month for the next 5 years with the passage of this bill. And if I thought this was going to let the wrong kind of people out as a result of that, even with that advantage, I wouldn't vote for the bill. But I feel comfortable with the bill as it is right now, Mr. Speaker, so therefore I feel pretty good about the financial aspect. This will free up 22 beds a month for the next 5 years. Our intake is in the magnitude of about 25 new inmates a month. So in a sense, it's got a positive fiscal note impact. Now, please don't think that we can reduce the corrections budget because of those 22 beds that's freeing up. What it really means is we're not going to have to appropriate additional monies to create new prisons to accommodate 22 new prisoners a year. So it's very definitely a fiscal advantage for us, although it's not going to show up in a reduction in the budget. It's just going to show up in the non-necessity for increasing the budget as much. I think there's a lot to recommend the bill, Mr. Speaker. I really feel that it's good legislation, particularly with the amendment that's on it right now. I think this, and I guess I made the same remark on the other bill the other day on this, I think the people, by and large, who will be released early, they're going to get 1/12 earlier, are the people we can best release. Although there's certainly nothing ironclad about it, I think as a general rule, the best behaved people in the prison system are probably those people who offer the best the best hope for their rehabilitation once they get on the outside. And as a matter of fact, a lot of them are going to automatically have been taken into that category anyway through the parole process. So it's good legislation, Mr. Speaker. It's financially beneficial to us, and I think it deserves our vote. Thank you.
Representative Ewing, you've been seeking the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a few words on the Speaker from the Judiciary Committee, the Chairman of the Judiciary Committee. One question I'd like to pose to that gentleman is do we have a positive fiscal note that has been written from the Department of Corrections that gives us a dollar amount, since this particular bill has not had any Finance Committee review? And I'll ask that first question.
Representative Miller.
Mr. Speaker, the fiscal note on this is zero for the reason I just explained. It doesn't call for any extra money to do this. And in fact, but there's no real way of showing it. It's a positive fiscal impact, but we don't have any way of showing that, in that we don't have to introduce another bill with a fiscal note to provide for those 22 prisoners that this bill or 22 beds, I should say, that this bill will free up. So it's the fiscal note officially is zero, but in real life, the good news is that it avoids another bill, an appropriation bill, that would have a considerably higher fiscal note, whatever the cost would be for housing prisoners at about $80 a day.
Representative Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess my point would be that, okay, that's fine and dandy, we do have a zero fiscal note, but it would seem appropriate that from the Department of Corrections that we should have a fiscal note that should indicate a dollar cost for every bed that we're going to be saving, because I think it's going to be real important if we're going to put that many more criminals out on the street, and there's going to be a situation where they're going to be going out in the street, and sure, we're going to be saving money from the standpoint of the state of Alaska, but what about the safety and the concerns of the public? And I guess if we're going to pass this kind of bill on the floor of the House, my concern would be let's make sure that we know what the complete fiscal analysis is on the bill before we pass it on the floor. And I guess we don't know what that positive amount is. If it's zero, it's zero, but it should be a positive amount, bed for bed.
Any further debate? Representative Pettyjohn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just respond to a few of the points made by the chairman of the Judiciary Committee. Interesting thing was, in my experience on the parole board, Mr. Speaker, that you're the best behaved prisoners, the guys that went through prison without ever having trouble, and we're always got these wonderful recommendations. Hey, you got to parole this guy. He's an inspiration to everybody around here. It was the child molesters. They were the ones that had this clean institutional record that we're going to be putting out on the street with this bill. And I'd like to make a couple points about the amendment. I co-sponsored the amendment with the distinguished Representative Spinard because it made a bad bill better. It didn't make it a good bill. It just made it a little better. The fact is that the review by the parole board is only going to take place for these prisoners that have been sentenced previous to the effective date of the bill. That's not going to occur for people that are sentenced from the date the bill goes into effect forward. The other thing about the amendment that perhaps the chairman of the Judiciary Committee doesn't realize is that, in fact, it is going to have the effect of retaining the present complicated system of who gets what good time. Because for these people that we're talking about here, the ones that are going to be let out a little early, assuming they get by the parole board, the Department of Corrections is going to have to keep a separate accounting on these people to decide which prisoners at what time go before the parole board to see if they get this extra good time taken off their sentence. So it isn't going to relieve that. The problem with the good time system is that the legislature has mucked it up over the last 15 years, and this is just going to muck it up some more. The fact is that the only part of the bill that I really do like, and I will acknowledge the arguments made on that point, is to give the good time in block, but we don't need to do all this other stuff. And I'd like to talk about what good time is. What are we talking? Maybe some of the people here don't understand what the concept of good time is. Good time is a way that the administrator of a corrections can control his population. You give people time. Well, the only thing that people in prison really want to do is get out. And if you have this hanging over their head, the sword or the carrot, as whoever you want to characterize it, it can be a very powerful tool to make people conform to the rules of the institution. So that's why we have good time. I have not heard one statement in the Hess Committee, which I serve on, or in Judiciary Committee, which I serve on, or just in the halls, I haven't heard anybody from corrections come to me and say, look, the good time system we have now isn't working. We're only giving them one day for every three they serve. We've got to give them one day for every two they serve in order to control our institution. That is not the testimony. That the testimony is let help us get these guys out of jail. So the good time concept is not advanced by this bill. All that's advanced by this bill is letting more people out on the street nilly-willy. And I would like to ask the members of this body, those of us who campaigned and talked about crime and law and order, and I don't think anybody that I know of in the community I represent who felt he had a mandate to come down here and try to let more people out of prison, we've got to give them one day for every two they serve in order to control our institution. That is not the testimony. That the testimony is let help us get these guys out of jail. So the good time concept is not advanced by this bill. All that's advanced by this bill is letting more people out on the street nilly-willy. And I would like to ask the members of this body, those of us who campaigned and talked about crime and law and order, and I don't think anybody that I know of in the community I represent who felt he had a mandate to come down here and try to let more people out of prison, if that's what you think the voters that elected you here wanted you to do, fine, you can vote for the bill. If you have a constituency like mine, that is not my mandate. And I do not feel that the voters that elected me sent me down here to try to get as many people out of prison as I possibly could. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Cotton.
First of all, I appreciate the reference to separate accounting. I think it's a very interesting topic. I'm curious about what kind of discretion the judges will have now. I know that if the judge is about to sentence somebody, I'm sure he understands what the rules are. So if the judge feels like the man ought to spend at least 5 years in jail, he can compute out, okay, he can figure out how much good time would be off of it, and then he can give him a sentence of 8 years or whatever it comes to. But under this, now, it sounds like there's going to be at least a couple cases where the judge really won't have any discretion. And I'm sure that's something that that was discussed in the Judiciary Committee when they were discussing presumptive or mandatory sentences. So if there's a mandatory sentence or a presumptive sentence on the books right now that the judge is faced with, no aggravating, no mitigating circumstances, he's got to assign that guy X number of years for certain X crime, does that automatically mean that then if we pass this, that automatically reduces that presumptive or mandatory sentence? Is that the effect of this? And if that's so, I'm not sure that I want to do that. And secondly, maybe I just don't understand what kind of discretion a judge really has when he's faced with a sentencing procedure like that. Maybe somebody could illuminate me on some of the discussions that took place in the Judiciary Committee.
Representative Miller.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the reason the amendment only had to be
from this time back and not forward is that the judge can set whatever sentence he wants for the future. And so that's not a problem. The problem, if you want to call it that, arose from the people who'd already been sentenced with the, you might say, the one-third understanding. I mean, the one-fourth understanding, and then we give them a one-third understanding. Those people are going to get out one-twelfth earlier, which, you know, frequently we're talking about an extra month or 2 months or something like that. The fact is, most of the time we're talking about just a matter of months. So from this point forward, it's not a problem, because if the judge sees somebody that's a real bad character and he doesn't want him out, I'm going to double-check what I'm going to say right now in an at ease in just a second, but my memory is that the judge can sentence that guy to X number of years under the law and preclude him from any parole and preclude him from any good time. But I want to double-check that last statement. But I think that's the current situation, and if so, it would also be the future situation. Let me double-check that and ask for an at-ease, Mr. Speaker, if you don't mind.
It appears that we are going to take the maximum sentence here of 120 days. Would the House please stand at ease? Would the House come back to order? We have the bill before us in third reading. Is there any further debate? Representative Miller.
Speaker, to clarify the point I just made, the judge does not have the discretion to reduce the good time figure or the good time availability. However, that is true in the current law as well. So again, I return to my point that we're only talking about one-twelfth of the sentence. Now, another point that I should make, Mr. Speaker, is that this is not retroactive back to the time for a person that's in prison right now. This bill is not retroactive back to a time that prisoner was sentenced. It only picks up from this moment on, so that if a person was sentenced to 20 years and he's in there right now and he's served five of it, he wouldn't retroactively get to go back and compute that 20 years and get one-third as his block. With the 5 years remaining in his sentence, his block of good time would be one-third of five, not of the entire sentence. Another, I think, very important point, Mr. Speaker, in addition to the fact that in most time we're only talking about a few months, is that these people are going to be supervised. They're not just let out and free as a bird to do whatever they want to. They are supervised. They still are prisoners of the state of Alaska, so to speak. They have to report to their probation officer. They have to be meet all the conditions of parole. And it's not at all like we were just simply letting them out. Even these prisoners who have conducted themselves, kept their nose clean in prison and everything else, they still have to be under supervision until the expiration of their sentence. So again, Mr. Speaker, I commend the bill, and I urge your vote for it.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to speak to explain the bill a little more carefully as to what it does and what it does not do. And I think that the members should also take a look at House Bill 141, which deals with the concept of parole generally. There are two kinds of parole. Good time relates to what's called mandatory parole. There's another type of parole that's called discretionary parole, and that's the parole that people normally go through if they want to get out of jail early. Good time aside, I'm going to talk about good time in a minute. House Bill 141 specifically provides that for discretionary parole, you may not get discretionary parole during the terms of the presumptive sentence. With respect to mandatory parole, good time, which is dealt with in this particular bill, let's look at the two categories of prisoners. Category one is the prisoner who has been sentenced before the effective date of this bill. Category two is the prisoner sentenced after the effective date of this bill. Category one, the people who were sentenced before the effective date of this bill. with the amendment that we just unanimously adopted, that my friend from South Anchorage and I introduced, we made it very clear that before anybody gets out any earlier, under that, they must be cleared by the parole board. And as the representative stated, he served on the parole board for a couple of years. He knows they're tough on criminals, and they're not likely to let anybody out who is a danger to society. We have two different concepts, once again. The first group of people are people who are just people who can't obey the rules. And those people don't get good time because they are not eligible since they break the rules. The concept of good time is extremely important from a management point of view. If we do away with good time, it will seriously hamper the ability of the prison administrators to maintain order in the prison, particularly if we do away with it wholesale retroactive. The concept is extremely important. Once again, the people who are sentenced before the effective date of this must be run by the parole board. With respect to the people who are sentenced after the effective date of House Bill 104, the time that they will be eligible for good time is the last one-third of their sentence. If people are, and this factor will be known to all of the sentencing judges. And the question that has been raised by the representative from District 9 in a note to me a few minutes ago and some other people is, what is the effect of this on presumptive sentencing? As the members of the body know, Mr. Speaker, presumptive sentencing is a type of sentence that just does that. It creates a presumption for second and third felony offenders in certain categories, they shall receive presumptive sentences of a certain amount of time. It's just that it is a presumption. And there are a large number of factors, 26 factors, that can be considered in aggravation of that by the sentencing judge, and 16 factors that can be considered in mitigation of that. If the judge, and to make a long story short, if the judge believes that this person is going to be a danger and they should not be getting out any earlier on a good time concept, he cannot directly say no good time. What they can do is create a longer sentence and find aggravating factors. Let me give you one. This is factor number 8. The defendant's prior criminal history includes conduct involving aggravated or repeated instances of assaultive behavior. And again, presumptive sentences, you're always dealing with somebody who's gone down before, who's had prior felony convictions. And if people are dangerous to the community, the judge can always have that subsection available to increase the term so that they would be serving the same amount as though there was a lesser amount of good time for the presumptive sentence. That's just one of 26 factors. If the person is engaged in a particularly heinous kind of a crime, the same kind of a thing. So once again, there are other factors built into this whole entire ball of wax, and I urge the members to consider that when voting for the bill.
Representative Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the explanation of what presumptive sentencing really meant, and I think I understood it, but I admit that sometimes that's helpful to hear some detailed explanations. This whole thing reminds me of the way municipal governments tax. They say one week, well, the mill rate's down, so we've lowered your taxes, but you get the bill in the mail, and it's a higher number as how many dollars you're supposed to pay the city. So the judge may give a longer sentence, but if you give a longer amount of good time, it actually means less time in the clink for somebody that goes. So really, it remains the discretion of the judge as to how long that person is likely to stay in jail, unless we're talking about a presumptive sentence, and in that case we're reducing the amount of required time under a presumptive sentence under this bill.
Representative Hewling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Before we get to the final vote on this, I'd like to explain my vote on it. I'm going to be voting against the bill for a couple of reasons. Mainly, one of the first reasons is that In a recent poll that was done in my district, it was indicative that crime was still a number one issue in downtown Anchorage and will continue to be that. I think the net effect of voting for this bill is letting more criminals out on the street. I don't think that's what the public wanted to elect me to do. Second of all, I don't think that the computing the time as far as block time, accrual time, under the new standard of time is going to make it any easier. I don't think we have to pass legislation so that we can correct an accounting error that's in the Department of Corrections right now. And I'm going to be voting against the bill. Thank you.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the gentleman from Spinard reminded me of a case that I've always felt somewhat concerned about. About 3 years ago, we had a gentleman, I believe he was up in Fairbanks Prison, and there was an awful lot of people that came down on his behalf, ministers, telling us that, you know, this guy did a major crime, but that all of a sudden, while in prison, he became a great Christian. And not only become a Christian and accepting Christ within his own way, he became a leader within prison and talked to other prisoners and did an outstanding job in helping to reform prisoners. So they pushed very hard for a resolution on behalf of him to be released early through a governor clemency. I don't know if the resolution went through, but eventually the governor, who had an awful lot of pressure upon him too from our ministers and from goodwill people, that he gave this guy clemency. And about 3 months later, all of our pages throughout the state were filled with this individual. I think he committed the same crime again. So I've always felt concerned about that situation. And the gentleman from Spinard made me wonder if through this bill we would be doing the same thing, not just for one individual who obeys all the rules within the prison, but an awful lot of them. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Pinney-Albury.
Mr. Speaker, I've been listening tentatively to our discussion this morning, and I still have not heard what to me seems to be the central reason for this bill. The governor has given us a bill to let these prisoners out early, but why? What is going to be accomplished? How are the people in my district going to be better off by letting these 426 sexual abuse of minor type people, sexual assaults, kidnappers, manslaughter? I don't know what the real purpose of the bill is, but what I've gleaned from the people that are speaking on behalf of the bill is that there's some kind of accounting problem, that because there has been different methods of calculating good time since prior to 1971, and we've had three different systems in effect, and the Judiciary Committee was good enough to provide us with a summary of these three different systems, that somehow there is an accounting problem, and this bill is going to help alleviate the accounting problem by putting everybody on the same basis. But my goodness gracious, we're talking about a total of, for just the people on this sheet of paper, of about 520 people or less. And even if there are others that are included that aren't on this sheet, I don't know how many prisoners we've got, let's say it's 2,000, how complicated is it to keep track of the good time calculation, given the fact that we've got word processors and computers that would take 15 minutes to program to keep track of it for any number of people? So I'm not convinced that any ease of accounting has anything at all to do with justifying this bill. The other reason that I heard was we're going to free up 22 beds a month. And that's good. I understand that our correctional facilities are overcrowded, and we should try to do something to free them up. But perhaps what the governor should be doing is sending us a comprehensive program for what we should be doing with our whole correctional institution system. You know, is it number one in his priority list for capital projects that he stood here some time ago and said that he has, that I've written for and asked and still do not have? If the problem is a shortage of correctional facilities, let's address the problem of shortage of correctional facilities. All this bill will do is give us a surplus of convicted criminals back on the street. Last point, Mr. Speaker, is that we've talked a lot this morning about the difference between three-quarters and two-thirds. And I don't think we ought to get lost in the numbers. There is nothing sacrosanct about allowing a prisoner out of jail after he served three-quarters of his time or two-thirds of his time, because next year, the year after, we might be in here with another bill that says, well, we should let him out changed from two-thirds down to three-fifths. So the number is not what's important. It's the principle. And the principle here is, are we going to allow convicted criminals back on the street? It isn't the amount of time for good behavior, because the number's got nothing to do with it. It is the principle. And I've yet to see what the principle is behind this bill. And if the judiciary chairman or someone else could tell me what I've missed in the discussion this morning about how the public will be better off and why we really need this bill, why it's in the public interest, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Representative Klux.
Mr. Speaker, I wasn't going to speak on this bill, but I apologize for keeping it, but I've just got to really make several responses here. First of all, one of the last comments by the prior speaker is, are we going to allow convicted criminals back on the streets? The answer is yes. Every convicted criminal in this state eventually gets on the street unless they have a life sentence or they die in prison or a 200 or 300 year sentence. You know, there's a lot of rhetoric going around here, Mr. Speaker, that's exactly that. Nice law and order rhetoric, which doesn't mean anything because every prisoner gets out eventually. And it seems to me that for every horror story that anybody here can present, you can show dozens of cases where it doesn't do anybody any good to have somebody sitting in a jail cell at a tremendous cost to the state. It isn't rehabilitating them. They are either no more nor no less likely to go out and commit another crime once they are released. And there is, as I say, a substantial cost to the state. The efficiency argument is a valid one. The argument of equity with regard to the municipal prisoners that I mentioned early on in this argument is a valid one. It is another reason to vote for this bill. But we might as well talk about the real issue here, and the real issue is the good time provision. It is the prison crisis. This legislature, as I've said before, has never been willing to build the prisons and pay the money that is necessary to keep the people in jail that this legislature keeps voting to put in jail. You don't have the commitment to do it, and you need to face up to that fact and try to find some mechanism to get out of jail those people who we can reasonably release from the system and continue to have reasonable protection for the public. Now, the amendment by the two members was an excellent amendment because it did eliminate some of the concern that you're going to have the people who have violated crimes and have presumptive sentences out on the street, even though there is a substantial danger of to the public. You've eliminated that by having the parole board that we're also proud of review those. Mr. Speaker, this state has more people in jail per capita than almost any state in the country and almost any country in the world. And it isn't helping. It isn't helping. Our crime rate's going up just as fast or faster than any place else. The solution to the crime problem is not to simply keep people in jail, and when it gets overcrowded, keep cramming them in the jails and not building any more jails and not passing legislation like this. That's not the answer. Mr. Speaker, there are several good provisions in this legislation, one of which is the good time provision. And I encourage people not to get wrapped up in the rhetoric of law and order, but to think it through. There are systems here to make sure that when people get out on the street, they are as safe as we can possibly make them in our correctional system. Some of the arguments you've heard here are arguments against the principle of good time. And if you don't like good time, then put a bill on the floor that repeals the principle of good time and we'll debate that. But that's not the issue here. The issue is whether it's one-fourth or one-third or whatever. And it seems to be that the arguments that say that good time is a bad idea are irrelevant to this bill. If for no other reason, you should adopt this bill because of the equity it creates with regard to municipal prisoners who are sitting in cells right next to state prisoners, and they're getting treated differently. And it's not fair.
Representative Penny Alberry.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. First of all, I'd like to reference the previous speaker's comment that every criminal goes back out onto the street unless he's serving a life sentence. And certainly that's true. What I'm talking about is that those criminals should not be released to go back out into the street until their sentence is served within the limits of the good time provisions that we now have. There simply is no case being made here this morning to show us what benefit will come from going from 75% to two-thirds. It seems to me that a burden of proof, to use the lawyer's own term, would be that you should show us some correlation between public benefit, between a least amount or a lower amount of good time and the rate of recidivism. Now, if you can make that case, if that has come up in a committee hearing, then I think we'd like to know it. And I would laugh if it wasn't such a serious problem, but you know, this accounting thing, which I thought was kind of amusing, is really the main thrust of this bill. As I read the governor's transmittal letter, he says, the primary purpose of the bill is to simplify the good time computation process. My goodness, we're using a screwdriver for a job that a wrench requires. Mr. Speaker, I would suggest that this legislature and the Division of or Department of Corrections adopt the motto similar to that great winemaker who says, I will release no man before his time.
Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also don't wish to extend this debate too long, but in regards to the remarks of the last two speakers, I think it's appropriate, while the attention of the body is focused on these problems, to bring a couple of points up briefly. Specifically, the case has been made that dangerous criminals should not be released before they should be released. And if they remain dangerous, they shouldn't be released, period. The comments have also... Well, let's just focus on that for a minute, and I'll keep it very brief. The basic thrust here is that we've got a problem as to who should be in and who should be out. To some extent, we're going to deal with that problem and the cost of the prison population through this bill. I have to agree with the majority leader that we tend to pass laws that make criminals out of people, and then we don't always pay the price in terms of the correction system to respond to that. One example that I think is worthy is the municipal code, which we just passed, where we increased the penalties from 30 days to 90 days for municipal offenders, and there are several bills, I think, before each of the committees, which also increased penalties for various crimes. One thing that maybe the members might want to focus on in the next year is the fact that we treat our violent felons with the same basic brush that we treat those who commit the so-called victimless crimes, the property crimes that would be appropriate to restitution, and other sorts of misdemeanors which might not really require prison time at all, but which could be more economically and more effectively treated by other means. So I've taken the liberty of just taking a moment of this debate to point out that we have a very serious problem in our prisons that relates very, very much to this issue. It's not just a question of how much time one serves, but also whether serving time in prison is appropriate to the crimes which we've created for the people of this state to concern themselves with. And I hope that as we go from this debate on to future debates with regard to the correction system and the criminal justice system, that we begin to make those differentiations between crimes that are truly appropriate to jail and crimes that could be better resolved, or the punishment for which could be better resolved in other ways. Thank you, sir.
Representative Miller.
A couple of quick points I want to make. The representative from the left side of the chambers made a very careless statement that I don't think he meant to make earlier. He said we were, under the terms of this bill, releasing some 426, I think, sexual abuse and other similar prisoners. Of course, that's not even remotely true. The percentage of sexual abuse people that would be released is, you know, whatever the percentage is of the people in the prison system, but we're certainly not going to release 426 sexual abuse prisoners under the terms of this resolution. What we are going to do, Mr. Speaker, is release people who have passed muster with the parole board, and I guess if you feel that having done that, you've done a pretty good job of protecting the public interest. And I feel we have, Mr. Speaker, releasing these people one-twelfth, just one-twelfth earlier than they otherwise would have been on their remaining sentences. If you feel that the public interest has been protected, then the thrust of this thing is two, I guess. Number one is the computation. It's not as simple as buying an Apple computer. It's a lot tougher than that. I think everybody on the Judiciary Committee is pretty well convinced that they do have an accounting nightmare on the thing that can't be just taken care of by bringing a programmer on for a couple of days. It's much more complicated than that, and anybody that thinks it isn't is kidding themselves. We've got 15 people across this state who are having to work with it every day, and it's caused by the legislature, not by the failure of the correction administrative people. That's one thing we're going to do. Mr. Speaker, what's the other advantage? Figure in your mind the cost of additional prisons to house these 426 people. And that's where your benefit comes in. You can build health facilities for Anchorage that you would not otherwise be able to build. You would be able to fund water and sewer projects for Anchorage, in the case of the South Central members who come from that city should be interested in that you would not otherwise be able to do. You would be able to fund educational programs across the state, including Anchorage, that you would not otherwise be able to do. Whatever we save by freeing up these 22 beds a month, whatever we save is money that we can therefore, in a tight budget year and a tight, even tighter budget years upcoming, we can put into other things like health, like roads, which are desperately needed, I understand, in your community, at least from reading the newspapers, I gather they are. These are the things we can do in lieu of keeping these people in 1/12 longer. I think that makes all the sense in the world, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The honorable member for East Anchorage asked that those who wish to cut the time to 1/3 rather than 1/4 prove their case that this would lower the crime rate. I think the obverse holds as well, and I note that since we increased the rate from of time, cutting good time from 1/3, which it was originally, to 1/4, the rate of crime has increased in the state, therefore increasing the time doesn't seem to work. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 104, Judiciary, amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
22 yeas, 16 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 104, Judiciary amended, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, lacking the required 2/3 vote, I move that the effective date clause on House Bill 104 be approved.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the effective date clause?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
I believe that requires a roll call vote.
Roll call vote on the effective date, being it's a change in the judiciary. The question is, shall the effective date clause be adopted? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk, tally the board.
33 yeas, 5 nays.
The effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Hewling.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration on committee substitute for House Bill number 104, Judiciary.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Concurrent Resolution Number 26 by the Rules Committee, proposing amendments to Rule 23 of the Uniform Rules of the Alaska State Legislature relating to committee meetings and providing for an effective date. The Committee on Rules has had the resolution under consideration and recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Concurrent Resolution 26 Rules with the same title and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.W. Miller, Chairman, signing do pass, Fuller, Grusendorf, Davis, M.W. Miller, and Wallace. Having no recommendation, Pinyalberry and Martin signed will be good for a one-year experiment. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Rules Committee substitute for HCR 26 be considered in lieu of the original resolution.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the committee substitute rules? Hearing no objection, the committee substitute has been adopted. Do we have any further amendments before us?
Amendment number 1 by M.W. Miller. Page 1, line 21. Delete full time.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Amendment number 1 be adopted.
Hearing objections, Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Basically, what we're trying to do in this amendment is to, during the interim, if there's going to be a committee meeting during the interim, the chairman would give the information to a legislative information office, and that legislative information would forward it on to the other legislative information offices throughout the state. And the way it is currently worded right now, it says distribute the notice to legislative information offices that is open full-time during the interim. And there was some question that full-time may mean only a LIO office that's open 8 hours a day, and there may be an LIO office that's only open 2 hours a day or 3 hours a day. So this would so there would be no mistake that it would go to all LIO offices that are open, whether they be open 1 hour a day or 8 hours a day. Thank you.
Are the objections maintained on Amendment number 1? Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to request a brief at ease.
The House, please stand at ease. Would the House please come back to order? We have before us Amendment number 1. Are the objections maintained on Amendment number 1? Hearing no objections to Amendment number 1, Amendment number 1 has been adopted. Would the clerk please read the next amendment or make reference to it?
Amendment number 2 by Martin Hanley, Maru Euling, Taylor Furness, and Pettijohn, and it's adding number 3, Pledge of Allegiance, under Rule 17, and renumbering the other sections.
Are there any objections to amend? Oh, Representative Martin, excuse me. Representative Martin. Move the amendment. I'm sorry, I interrupted you.
Mr. Speaker, I move the amendment.
Hearing objections, Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, first I'd like to call the House on the amendment.
House has been called.
Mr. Speaker, from the very beginning, when I first became a legislator, I was always concerned, and some people think it may be over-patriotic, but always concerned why we never said the Pledge of Allegiance. And that's a part of this democracy that's been let out for quite some time. We hear people say that we pledge to our Constitution at the beginning when we installed as legislators, and they feel that's good for once every 2 years or once every 4 years. But I kind of feel there's a renewing every day like we do with the prayer. I kind of thought it was with a sense of some guidance this morning that our minister said a prayer for America. Maybe some the power above us knew what was coming up with this amendment. And I really think that it would really add to the sense of protecting our country, the sense of deliberating for democracy when we say the Pledge of Allegiance each morning. Thank you, sir.
Representative Maru.
Mr. Speaker, I rise to speak in favor of the amendment. At least 12 state legislatures presently include the Pledge of Allegiance as a specific item in the daily order of business, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. The Pledge of Allegiance that we say that probably most of us were raised with in school dates from September 8, 1892. That makes it 93 years old. The Pledge of Allegiance is made to the flag, which is a symbol probably means something different to each of us, and it is made to the Republic. The Pledge of Allegiance is not made to a person. The Pledge of Allegiance is not made to any given government. I speak in favor of it.
Any further debate? Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I also rise in support of this amendment. Mr. Speaker, I'm sure you've heard me say many times, we live in a great country and we live in a great state. I know it's been said that when we win an election and you take office, you raise your right hand and you do solemnly say a pledge. But, Mr. Speaker, I think it's good that we remind ourselves of the greatness of our country. And one of the ways that one can adequately do that is through the Pledge of the Allegiance. Mr. Speaker, as a high schooler, I was in school during the time of prayer in school, and I know that it is not fashionable to pray in school anymore. But I believe we do still recite the Pledge of Allegiance. Mr. Speaker, I've heard a number of young people come to Juneau, and one of the questions that they've asked is, why don't you pledge the allegiance to the flag each day you have the prayer? Why don't you follow through with the other? And it makes sense, Mr. Speaker. At least one come off sounding very overly patriotic. Let me set the record straight. I love my country as well as anyone, and I don't wish to really impose anything upon anyone. But I think it's proper for this body to pass this amendment. I think it's proper for this body to give due consideration to a great country and a great state. And with that in mind, Mr. Speaker, I would ask my colleagues to look within themselves and let's see this amendment. I think it's proper to do, and I would ask all members to support it.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, I'm composing an amendment to the amendment, so I'd like to have it at ease right now.
The House, please stand at ease. Would the House come back to order? We have before us Amendment Number 2 that was moved by Representative Martin. Is there any further debate? Representative Phillips.
Speaker, there's an amendment on the clerk's desk that I would like to move as an amendment to the amendment.
Would the clerk please read that amendment?
Amendment to Amendment Number 2 by Phillips. Page 1, line 9. After 3, Pledge of Allegiance, insert new paragraph. 4. On consecutive days, commencing with the first day of each session, the membership of each house shall sing the Star-Spangled Banner, America the Beautiful, or God Bless America. On Fridays, the membership of each house shall sing the Alaska Flag Song. And renumber the remaining sections.
That's good time. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, you know, the amendment here, and, you know, it's real obvious to me that we're...
Point of order.
Representative Pettyjohn.
I think the amendment is frivolous, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like you to rule it out of order.
Representative Pettyjohn, the amendment is germane, and the frivolousness of it is one that I guess is of an individual nature, and I'd prefer that each member deal with that decision instead of putting it up on the chair. So I'll rule the amendment to the amendment in order. Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, I plan on withdrawing this amendment. I just want to make a point.
Representative Phillips.
The point is, it is really ridiculous that we're dealing with something here, and I just feel very strongly that it's just all it is a political game, and we're going back home to show how wonderful we are. And if we want to be wonderful, let's adopt the amendment to the amendment and get it over with. That's all I'm saying. So,
Representative Phillips, I appreciate the spirit in which you presented the amendment to the amendment, and I understand, but we are talking about something that is very serious to individuals here, and that's why I was hesitant about ruling it out of order. Representative Martin.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, I was going to advise on a point of personal privilege. I in no way, shape, or form have any political motive in this supposed amendment, and I object to it very much. If he wants it as an amendment to the amendment, it is not a friendly amendment. He should have it on its own merits. Thank you.
Representative Phillips did withdraw his amendment to the amendment, and the body thanks you for that. Representative Navarre on Amendment Number 2.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
I'm going to speak against the amendment. The reason is, maybe I should explain that, because someone will say Navarre's not very patriotic, and that's not true. I have a great deal of pride in our flag and our country, and I consider myself very patriotic. I made the Pledge of Allegiance thousands of times when I was going through school, and I liked it. And now, I mean, my commitment to the flag and to this country goes on day to day. And it doesn't wane day to day, so I have to stand up and make a pledge every day. My commitment is eternal. I don't need to make that pledge every day. My suggestion is, if there are some of you who feel that need, perhaps we could set aside 5 minutes in the morning and you could get together somewhere and make that pledge. Thank you.
Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I noted with interest some of the remarks of the minority leader about how the person who offered the amendment to the amendment ought to make an amendment on his own and let it ride on its own merits. But I noticed that he's making an amendment to somebody else's amendment to the rules. So I think perhaps that's one thing we could consider. I have kind of a problem here. I don't have any reason to vote against this. I mean, the Pledge of Allegiance, of course, we're all for that. We're all for the flag. Although I'm not sure that on the spur of the moment it should be considered in this fashion. So I agree with the minority leader that if a person has an amendment to the rules like this, he ought to introduce it on his own and let it travel through the process and live or die on its own merits rather than to ride on somebody else's amendment.
Representative Miller.
Speaker, I'd like, with your permission, to sort of stretch the rules to their to their uttermost and remind the body that for this resolution to pass and for us to get the relief that we are seeking, and I think everybody agrees we need, on Rule 23, this amendment has to pass two-thirds of each of two bodies. Now, if one of those bodies, Mr. Speaker, I'm quoting the rule.
Representative Pettyjohn, point of order.
I think this the rule that prohibits discussion of the other body was designed to prohibit this kind of discussion, Mr. Speaker. I'd ask it out of order.
Mr. Speaker, gentlemen, when we're talking about an amendment to be adopted takes a majority vote. However, by Rule 53, when we're talking about a rules change, it will take 27 votes. Representative Miller, continue with that, but try to be a little bit...
Speaker, I'm staying... By quoting to the members the rule as it exists, I'm just reminding members that a rules change has to pass by two-thirds vote of each of two bodies. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further debate on amendment number two? Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, I just have a question. Was this amendment offered in the House Rules Committee and discussed?
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just to answer the member's question, no, it wasn't.
Representative Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not against the Pledge of Allegiance being in there, but it seems to me we have a process, we have appropriate mechanisms to offer this amendment, and yet the opportunity was there, and it was not... taken upon when the Rules Committee had this resolution before it.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to clear up a couple points. First, the amendment to the resolution we're passing takes 21 votes, only 21 votes of the House. Two-thirds to finally pass it, but 21 for this. The Rules Committee Chairman was right. It was not presented there because it happened later. We were hoping for another bill to solve this problem that many people have expressed themselves. Many of our citizens from throughout the states have expressed themselves as to the value they feel it would help the legislators and the state as a whole. There are many amendments that are offered on this floor to numerous bills that have not gone through committee. The amendment we just previously passed did not go through the rules chair, although it was a very good suggestion by someone. It was a very good chair, but it did not go through the rules committee. This, I feel, is a good amendment to this bill. I feel there's going to be many good amendments to many bills that perhaps the individuals in that committee did not conceive at that time. that they sat on a committee and felt we've had other time, more time to think about the and if above to a particular bill, and now we feel this particular amendment to the bill before us will make it an even better bill. So I don't think we should go on that weakness that someone is trying to grab for of another reason outside than the merits of the amendment itself to say the Pledge of Allegiance each day. Thank you.
Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have difficulties with this amendment on a very real basis. One of them is that when we hear the prayer is different every day. It gives us something to contemplate, to meditate, to think about our responsibilities during the course of the day. The danger with a formula pledge is that it becomes an empty, meaningless ritual that is repeated, as in the Romans used to put a pinch of incense before the statue of the emperor of that particular year. Aren't we in danger of reducing the pledge to that sort of meaningless ritual by this kind of political playing ground? The other thing is that when we took our oath of office, when we affirmed, when we were sworn in, when we affirmed that we would support the Constitution of the United States and of the Constitution of the State of Alaska, we were putting things in perspective. If we are here to serve the interests of the national government first, that's one thing. But I think if we have this amendment, we should also affirm each day our pledge to support the Constitution of the State of Alaska and the interests of the people of Alaska first. This may make the whole matter too complex, but I think we should put these things in some real perspective instead of trying to make a ritual affirmation that loses meaning. Thank you.
Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, I don't think ritual affirmations are meaningless. I think ritual affirmations are symbolic, and they say something about the way we feel about things. There's only one community that I'm aware of, Mr. Speaker, in the United States that has voted that its school children will not say the Pledge of Allegiance before each day of class, and that's where I went to school as an undergraduate, Berkeley, California. They made a statement when they adopted that policy. Their schools don't say the Pledge of Allegiance, and that was a symbol that they elected to send out. Well, I think by adopting this amendment, we're sending a symbol out that we have no qualms about reaffirming each day. And to me, it's not a ritual. When I say the Pledge of Allegiance, I listen to the words, and I enjoy doing it. And so I think rituals do have their place in our society, and I suggest this amendment would provide for a good one for us. Thank you.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to support the amendment because I don't think it's frivolous. I've chosen a symbol for my desk this year, the American flag and the Alaska flag, because I thought long and hard about whether or not I'd bring back another symbol I had here last year, which was an orca. And it was an issue that I took on and that many other people in this body supported me on. And I, as another representative, has chosen a seagull or some other resemblance of a bird. Mr. Speaker, I think it's important. I think it's germane to this body conducting good business to maintain that Pledge of Allegiance as part of its orderly business that it conducts on a daily basis. And on that basis, I'm going to support this amendment. Thank you.
Representative Pierce.
Mr. Speaker, I think if it will help the representative from Potter March to recognize an eagle, perhaps we should pass this amendment.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to vote against the amendment, as I mentioned before, and my reason is that it's not necessary for me. My commitment is to the flag and to the country and the state of Alaska are eternal. Also, I think it's, I don't know, I just think it's, this is frivolous. At this time, it wasn't in committee. The person, the maker of the amendment called the House. Obviously, they want us on record. And so I'll give them what they want, although I feel a little bit insulted by this. Someone is questioning.